Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. Today's Thursday, March the 30th. 2023. I think I forgot to tell you what day it was yesterday, so I'll tell you now. Yesterday was Wednesday, March the 29th. Thus, today is March the 30th. I'm Tim Wildman with Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning.
Chris Woodward.
For those watching in Australia, happy Friday.
Where's the international timeline, Chris?
I'm going to look it up.
Is it called timeline or dateline?
Dateline, I think. Okay. Kind of right the middle of the Pacific.
Isn't it over there at like somewhere around New Guinea or somewhere?
Yeah, I'm reading from the internet. This is the NOAA website. The International Dateline, established in 1884, passes through the mid-Pacific Ocean and roughly follows a 180 degrees longitude north-south line on the Earth, located halfway around the world from the prime meridian, the O degrees longitude line in Greenwich, England, or they may say Greenwich.
Chris, that was compelling stuff right there. I just want you to know.
Broadcasting school is paying off, Mom.
So do you have an island or a? It's over there. Tell me where that is.
Okay. Yes, it does. It makes some sort of like crooked line.
Kind of like our politicians.
Yes, thank you. Down the Pacific Ocean, kind of a zigzag down the Pacific Ocean, and it's near something called Kiramati, which I'm sure I just butchered, Tonga, the Chatham Islands. Midway Islands is in that area as well.
The Tonga what now, Chris?
Tonga, I guess is what it's called. Midway Islands, think of that. Battle of the Midway, that was right along the international dateline.
All right, well.
And it's not even Friday, Trivia Friday. Look at that.
Have you ever been...
South Pacific,
that part of the world?
No, I've always traveled the other way across the Atlantic. I'm an airplane buff.
Yeah.
So we have flight aware. We watch planes going overhead. Yesterday when I was home at lunch hour, watched a Delta that came out of Atlanta going nonstop to Tokyo. 14-hour flight. Mm-hmm. So they took off around 1 o'clock Atlanta time. So they were going to be in sunshine all the way to Tokyo because they were following that track. But they left on Wednesday but arrived on Thursday over there. So I just imagine 14 hours on a flight, number one. It's kind of like when you go to Israel.
Yeah, Israel is from New York is 10 hours there, 11 hours back, generally.
Yes.
So a little bit longer, but... Wow. You mean a flight? Did you know somebody on the flight or something?
No. We FlightAware is a little app that you can put on your phone. So when you see those planes going over your head, so you live in Tupelo, so you put in Tupelo, and you can find out where the planes are going. It's really neat.
So that's a hobby.
Yeah. It's just watching.
Well, I golf. I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you do, Chris?
I like to follow sports. If there's a ball and they keep score, I'm into it.
Thank you for that. I'm aware. You can the FlightAware you're talking about. FlightAware app. I am familiar with. It's the same thing you're talking about. You can go on the internet and track any flight.
Yes.
You want to.
Yes.
So you saw a jet.
Yep.
And then you said, I want to know where it's going.
It went overhead to Tupelo.
You could do it live, track it live?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And what the altitude is.
That's interesting.
What time they took off. Even the gate they used in Atlanta and when they arrive in Tokyo. It's really neat.
Yeah. Tokyo. So from Atlanta to Tokyo is, what did you say?
14-hour flight.
14-hour flight.
You can probably fly from Atlanta to Tokyo quicker than you could drive through Atlanta.
But a boom. Yeah. Well, and you're not going to get plane jacked.
Yeah.
No. No.
As you might in some places in Atlanta.
It's an opening day in Atlanta, by the way.
That would be something else to see a plane being hijacked out there on the runway. All right. Listen, we have strayed afar yet from our topics today that we want to cover on the program. We thank you, as always, for listening. Steve Tiber, president of 8 Days of Hope, will be with us at the bottom of the hour. The ministry he heads up is doing some relief efforts, some cleanup and rebuilding efforts related to the tornadoes that hit Mississippi last week. He's going to talk about that, as well as some other things that his ministry is doing, which we wholeheartedly support.
Yeah.
So, Christopher, what's your first hard news story you got to cover today?
Yeah, we need to be in prayer for our military service members and their families today. And I say that because at least 9 military service members are dead after an Army Black Hawk helicopter crash in Kentucky. This happened last night during what the military has described as a nighttime training exercise. Again, it's in Kentucky. We have a story on our website, AFN.net. A spokesperson for Fort Campbell said this morning that the deaths happened the previous night in southwestern Kentucky, again, during a routine training mission. I have a bit of audio here. This is one of the initial local television news reports, and we don't always air the local TV spots here, but this reporter did a nice job of kind of bringing people into the environment of the situation. Clip 4.
It was a pretty emotional scene here. We saw a caravan, probably about a dozen cars, all law enforcement with their lights on, and we did see inside of an ambulance, and there was an American flag draped over what is believed to be a person that died in this crash, very obviously a military member here. Now, just to map out for you where exactly this crash happened. So we are in Cadiz, Kentucky. It's in Trigg County. It's about an hour and 20 minutes northwest of Nashville. And we're only about 40 miles from Fort Campbell, where we know that these Black Hawk helicopters came from.
Now, the crash is under investigation this morning.
This happened when now?
Last night.
10 o'clock last night, you had 2 Black Hawk helicopters. Fort Campbell, just as situated, is about 60 miles northwest of Nashville. And it's right on the state line, Kentucky-Tennessee. Fort Campbell, the home of the famed 101st Airborne Division. What we know at this point, these 2 Black Hawk helicopters were out on a training mission. And in our story, the Associated Press story that you have on AFN.net, an eyewitness who's used to seeing these helicopters out on exercises noticed last night, apparently he was sitting outside his back porch or whatever, and the 2 helicopters went over his house. And he said, again, he's used to seeing these. He said, but these 2 were really close. And then a few minutes later, he noticed the lights went out and he saw this huge explosion. So it leads one to believe initially, we don't know for sure yet, there was probably some kind of collision for some reason between these 2 helicopters and at least 9 people killed. Very
wow.
Sad. Very sad.
Yeah. You just, you know, you take training exercises for granted, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then, because we see them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Americans do see military training going on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's so sad. But they're going to be exploring what happened there. But
this will probably play out for the next several days.
It happened a few weeks ago in Huntsville.
Another Black Hawk helicopter then. Two pilots killed in that incident.
Weren't they out of Tennessee, though, too?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Black Hawk helicopter.
As well?
2 Tennessee National Guard pilots in that incident a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I'll share a link to that as well because we're getting a response to our coverage on Facebook.
All right. Next story, Chris.
In other news, a vigil was held last night in Nashville, Tennessee. After it was for the shooting victims there at Covenant School, and everybody knows the situation that unfolded earlier this week at the school there in Nashville. Among those in attendance last night was First Lady Jill Biden. The mayor was also there, as well as the police chief, who took time to praise officers there in Nashville for their rapid response to what happened this week. Clip 2.
We are grateful to the team of officers who rushed into that school building without hesitation Monday morning to locate and stop the threat before any more innocent victims were harmed.
Now, we talked yesterday about the debate on whether the manifesto from the female who identified as a male shooter might be released. Some groups don't want it released out of concern for a number of things, but other people see it as a matter of public record, and the shooter was killed by police. But Fred, you had said this morning prior to the show that the manifesto may actually be coming out.
That was confirmed by Fox this morning that they are going to release it. They did not give a time. But I think this is really critical to this story because this manifesto was written by the shooter shortly before she went to that school. And apparently it is going to tell us, confirm for us the motivation of going to that Christian school and opening fire. So it's really important to this story.
A manifesto, when a lot of us hear that word, we think about a long written, like book or something, explaining an ideology, like Mein Kampf, for instance, on Nazism. I got that right, true?
Yeah, I'll read you the definition.
Okay. All right. What's manifesto mean?
Defined by Merriam-Webster, it is a written statement declaring publicly the intentions, motives, or views of its issuer.
Okay, so it doesn't have to be long. It's a declaration of why I believe what I believe or why I do what I do, right? So that's what we're – it may be one page, two pages, who knows exactly.
That's right. But we do know from the earlier reports that she was telling friends that she was going to die. That day, she expected to die when she went into that school. She knew authorities would respond.
I still, we want to see what's in there, that manifesto. But the evil intentions here are hard to even fathom.
Yeah,
because you know when you hear of a school shooting, for example, where one student goes in and starts shooting, and maybe they had been bullied, you hear, or they were in some kind of a fight with other classmates. And while that's horrible, at least you understand the motivation and the human emotions that may have caused this. But when you think about someone who says, you know what? I'm going to plan to go into a school with kindergartners through, fifth graders or whatever it was, and murder little children.
As many as I can, because she had three weapons.
That's what I'm saying. Little innocent children who have nothing, you don't even know them. What kind of satisfaction would one get out of that?
I don't think we can understand it. We can understand the height of evilness in that person's heart at that moment when you're willing to go into a school.
It's demonic.
You plan it.
Yeah.
And the police have confirmed this. Well planned. She had scoped out the school. She knew where the doors were, and she knew what she had to do to get in because all the doors were locked.
Right. So she shot open the locks. She shot the locks to open the door, right?
Yes, to get inside.
So the school wasn't negligent in that way.
Yeah. No. And then to go in and then to walk through the hallways, seeing what humans she could find, whether kids. In this case, it was a janitor, was the principal of the school. Principal of the school, by the way, who ran towards the shooting to try to stop.
She was a hero.
Absolutely.
Heroin.
Yes. And then opening fire. But like you, Tim, it's just, we can't understand this. How you can aim a gun at little innocent boys and girls, 9 years of age or 8 years of age, and open fire on them. Mm-hmm. Absolutely no threat to you, but you're going to kill them.
Well, as I've said, I know most people listening to us today believe in the Bible. Mm-hmm. And what the Bible says about human nature and spiritual matters. Maybe some people listening are skeptical or don't believe that, but I think this is confirmation, again, that evil exists in our world today. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about a spiritual evil. I'm not using that in a sort of a, generic way. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about this woman was possessed by the devil.
Had to be.
Yeah.
To do something this horrible and atrocious. And, you know, the Bible says God exists, and he's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Right.
If you read in the Old Testament, and the God of David, God of and Jesus, his son, but the God of the New Testament, too. So all of that collectively describes a spiritual war that's going on in the world, on earth, and in every human heart. And this woman, instead of submitting her life to Christ and to follow God, which brings goodness and light, she decided to follow darkness and the devil.
Yeah.
And if you want to say, well, Tim, the devil's, you also believe in leprechauns? Mm-hmm. Listen, this is not funny. Jesus confronted the devil.
Right.
The devil tempted Jesus. Jesus spoke about the devil.
Yes.
And he wasn't talking about leprechauns. He was talking about a real spiritual entity that seeks to do harm and really capture the souls of people.
Yes.
In this case, this young woman, was she in her 20s?
28.
She was possessed by the devil. That's why she went in to this school and did what she did.
It's interesting. You talk about the manifesto. We reported this earlier in the week. The LGBTQ groups do not want this manifesto released.
Why?
It begs the question, why? Are they concerned that in that manifesto, this young woman may have written, I'm targeting a Christian school.
Right.
Because Christians are against transgenderism. They are opposed to transgenderism. They speak out against transgenderism and homosexuality, et cetera, et cetera. Are they afraid she's going to say, I'm going to go up and kill as many kids and instructors as possible because I'm angry with them? Now, we don't know if that's the case, but when we heard the report that these LGBTQ groups did not want this manifesto released, that was the first thing I had to think. They're worried. Her motivation was to punish those who are opposed to homosexuality, transgenderism.
Yeah, well, you know, it was the same type of situation in Colorado Springs. Was it Colorado Springs?
Yeah, that guy was non-binary, supposedly.
What does that mean?
I'll look it up so I don't get it wrong. Non-binary people may identify as an intermediate or separate third gender, identify with more than one gender, no gender, or have a fluctuating gender identity.
I can't keep up with this stuff. This is nuts.
That's what I'm here for.
There's boys and girls, okay? Anyway, and if you identify as something else, you're not. You're just not.
Yeah.
You are what God created you to be, and that is what you were born as. Anyway, my point is, this is like the third time in the last year or so that the mass murderer has been a part of this community, this trans community. So, and also if there were, think about this for a minute, we're accused of, by we, I mean Christians, right? Especially conservative Christians. We're accused of hating. Right. In other words, some people are going to say, yes, because the Christians hate the LGBT community, therefore the LGBT, will fight back against that. Okay. And that's what leads to harm among LGBTQ is because Christians hate. Well, if that were true, that's not true.
No.
That's a mischaracterization of the vast, vast, vast majority. Listen, I'm as conservative. Well, maybe not. You may be more conservative than I am, Fred. But we're as conservative as they come, and Christians. I don't know anybody. I've never run across anybody that's ever said anything like kill LGBT people or you know, burn their houses down or anything like that. Never, ever, ever have I heard that among Christian people. I've heard people say, I wish they would turn from their sin, because the Bible teaches that certain behaviors are sinful, including homosexuality and lesbianism. And you pray for them, and you try to witness to them and help them, but not this idea that Christians hate LGBTQ is only pushed by the liberal media.
Yeah, and the thing is, we bring it up in the context of liberal activists, homosexual activists, trying to take away our freedoms.
Right.
We bring it up in that context most of the time. We don't go every day preaching about the sin of homosexuality.
Yeah. For example, let's take the baker out in Colorado. Yeah.
Mr. Phillips.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jack Phillips, who's eternally persecuted by these
people. If he's the only baker in the state of Colorado.
Yeah. So these LGBT folks, they want to force him to, he has a business. Mm-hmm. He doesn't discriminate against who comes into his business to buy cupcakes.
That's right.
You don't enter his bakery and he goes, "Hey, are you gay? I'm not selling you any cupcakes out the door." No, he doesn't do anything like that.
Nope.
But he says, "Listen, I'm a Christian. I can't make a cake for a homosexual, quote, wedding."
Yes.
It violates my religious beliefs and my conscience. And there are 100 other places around here who will do just that, who will make the cake, who don't have a religious objection.
Right.
No, that's not good enough. They will say, those on the LGBTQ side will say, that, Mr. Phillips, represents your hate
for
gay people.
Yes.
Okay, you see where they equate a disapproval of their behavior. They say that by definition is hate.
Right.
See how this works? It's unfair.
Mm-hmm.
It's like saying, okay, if I had a family member that was a alcoholic, right? And I said to him or her, I'm not taking you to the bar. Or I disapprove of your abuse of alcohol.
Yeah.
Oh, so you hate me.
Mm.
No, I love you. I want the best for you. But I don't approve of your alcoholism, and I'm not going to be a person who condones that in any way, shape, or form. So would that mean I hate the alcoholic?
Absolutely not.
Okay, but this is the way they want to play the game here.
Yeah, and they are the ones taking the actions against the Christians. Let's be clear about this.
Right, because they're persecuting the baker, Mr. Phillips.
In Jack Phillips' case, the person in the latest challenge involving Jack, the one he's still in court over, is a man who identifies as a woman, who happens to be an attorney, that wanted Jack to design a transition or gender reveal cake.
Yeah.
To which Jack said, no, I can't do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, we will see what this manifesto says.
Yes.
Now, the FBI is going to review it first. So this should be in a matter of days. I mean, how long does it take to review?
If it's a two-page document, shouldn't take too long.
No, it should take a day or two.
No.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Steve Tiber from 8 Days of Hope will be with us after the break. They're doing a lot of excellent work, and we'll let him tell you more about that when we get back. Stay with us.
Dear 1 million moms, I've always thought that maybe your organization was making a mountain out of a molehill. But today, I cannot believe what I just saw on my TV.
Concerned about the trash flowing into your home through today's media that simply will not censor itself? Make your voice heard. If you see trash in the media, tell us. use the Submit Trash button at 1millionmoms.com. That's 1millionmoms.com. And thanks.
We live in a day when America's families are under attack like never before. Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of the American Family Association. The war against biblical principles rages on numerous fronts. The internet, Hollywood, Washington, D.C., America's corporate boardrooms, and the list goes on. At American Family Association, we're committed to standing against the enemies of God, the enemies of your family. And we recognize it's an impossible task without God's favor and your partnership. Thank you for being faithful to pray for this ministry, to give financially, and to respond to our calls for activism. What you do on the home front is crucial to what we do on the battlefront. We praise God for your faithfulness, and may He give us many victories in the battles ahead as we work together to restore our nation's biblical foundations.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
My goal as a teacher is to impart knowledge and then be able then for them to take it and turn it into wisdom. As we teach, I think, okay, 5 years down the road, how will the material that I am teaching them really affect their lives and their careers?
Hi, Todd Starnes here. Truett offers biblically-centered degree programs. Check out truett.edu/starnes. Chris Markris lost both of his legs to diabetes, but he hasn't let his medical issues stand in the way of living life. That's why he jumped out of an airplane over West Addison, Vermont, skydiving from 10,000 feet. It was a fairly uneventful trip until the landing. That's when Chris realized he was missing one of his prosthetic legs. It had blown off during the jump, a $20,000 leg now missing. So Chris went on Facebook and shared his dilemma. About 100 people turned out to search around the landing zone, and the following day, a farmer found the leg in the middle of a soybean field. A terrific story about humanity and the corona crisis. It's nice to know there are still folks out there across the fruited plain willing to lend a helping hand to get a guy back up on his feet. I would urge you to read my latest book, Culture Jihad, How to Stop the Left from Killing a Nation. It's available right now at your favorite bookstore and online at toddstearns.com.
For He has rescued us from the dominion of darkness and brought us into the kingdom of the Son He loves. Colossians 1:13.
American Family Radio.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. If you want to send us an email, as long as it's a K-Love email, which is positive and encouraging, you can send us a positive and encouraging email at comments@afr.net, comments@afr.net. If it's a negative email, complaining about something, it will the AI associated with that email service will block your email. So, positive vibes only at comments@afr.net, comments@afr.net. Tim, Fred, and Chris, and we are delighted to have with us our good friend, our Christian brother, and a gentleman, and I use that term lightly, who heads up an organization that we support completely and have been partnering with for a long time, 8 Days of Hope, our good friend Steve Tiber. Good morning, Steve.
Hey, guys. Great to be here. I woke up this morning. It was 41 degrees, and I called my wife.
Here in Northeast Mississippi.
In Northeast Mississippi, which I lived for 20 years. But I called Charmaine, my wife, who's in New York, and I said, honey, it's 41 degrees. She goes, that's July in Buffalo. So I didn't bring a coat. I didn't bring gloves. I saw some of your staff coming in like they walked through a blizzard. Yeah. Tim, what's up with that?
I know.
Gosh. I know.
We're all going to go there in July.
July hits here.
Go to Buffalo to vacation in July. Oh, man. That's 41. It's July in Buffalo. Wow. All right. Steve, I know the national headquarters for 8 Days of Hope is just a few miles from here, right?
It is, about 5 miles from where we're speaking.
Here in Tupelo, it's in Pontotoc County.
Yeah, it's at Pontotoc, right over the line.
But now you moved back home. You grew up in Buffalo. You moved back home, so you live there. But you commute a lot, obviously.
Yeah, you know, no matter where a disaster happens, you get on an airplane or you get in your car and you go there technology. So, and we have a satellite in the Northeast in Buffalo, 100,000-square-foot building, and we're in Iowa as well, Cedar Rapids, Iowa, so we could be in multiple places.
Okay, now you happen to be in Tupelo today. You did staff devotion for our staff this morning because of the tornadoes that hit last week?
Yeah, so we're here in Amory, Mississippi, the northeastern part of Mississippi. Amory, Smithville, Wren. Of course, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of homes have been either destroyed or greatly damaged. We were here Saturday morning. Literally, the storm happened overnight. And some of our leaders, we have 211 volunteer leaders, but about 44 of them live within 30 miles of Tupelo. And so that morning, chainsaws and bucket trucks and bobcats were in Amory already very quickly. But fast forward to today, about 500 volunteers have either already showed up or they're on their way. And we're in Amory, Mississippi, and we'll be there right through Easter weekend serving.
What are you going to be doing?
Well, we're doing chainsaw work. We're tarping roofs. We're taking debris to the front of the road so it can be removed at some point.
It's a massive cleanup effort.
It really is. So there's no rebuilding here right now. Right. This is our rapid response arm.
Right, gotcha.
So like today, there's 10 bobcats at 10 different homes moving materials for families in need and, of course, for free. Mm. Now, those families we serve, they come back at dinner and we get a chance to meet them, pray with them, encourage them, to hear the gospel. So there is a gospel side to what we do, of course.
Well, I wanted to ask you that because I know you do work all over the country, 8 Days of Hope. I mean, you have a national footprint, really. But I want to ask you this, for those who maybe are thinking, hey, I'm within driving distance of Amory, Mississippi.
Sure.
And I can come for 2 or 3 days. Could you use folks like that?
Absolutely. So whenever you volunteer, anything we do, it's free. You just have to get where we're at. We have all the tools. We have leaders in place. Well, we don't have anything. God has leaders in place.
Everything's organized. Well,
it has to be. We've had as many as 4,700 volunteers in Houston after Harvey. Mm. And to feed the volunteers that week was $160,000. So when you show up, we provide food and lodging. There's a safe place to stay, hot showers. We start and end every day with worship and devotion. You're going to leave exhausted, but you'll be changed forever. I'm telling you, your heart's going to be full.
Okay, how do I sign up if I can do that?
Well, I signed you up this morning when you
did.
Yeah, just go to the website, 8daysofhope.com, 8daysofhope.com. Read the FAQs, frequently asked questions. We have places for RVs. You can bring your family if their kids are over 16. It is an active disaster site. You can come for 3 days. You can come for the next 12 days. We'll put you up.
What's the website again?
8daysofhope.com.
Now, when you say the family can come, let's say you're just saying those under 16 can't work, or
yeah,
what?
So,
how does that work?
Yeah, so we have lodging and we have jobs for those 16 and older.
Gotcha.
So this arm, you have to be 16
gotcha.
Or older. Now, if you're 16 or 17, you have to come with a parent or legal guardian. Our rebuild trips, which we have one coming up in May in Fort Myers because of Hurricane Ian, you can bring an infant. You can bring a 5-year-old, and people do.
So that's different than this.
It is.
Clean up in the immediate aftermath of a storm.
This is an active disaster site. I was there yesterday. You have wires down. You have trees, widowmakers. Those are big tree limbs just hanging there waiting to be cut down. It's still a dangerous site.
Yeah. Yeah, tell us a little bit more about your work. A lot of people, you mentioned this morning, devotion, have forgotten about what happened in Florida a few months ago.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like you say, a news story lasts about a minute and a half these days.
Right.
You know, we live in an instant communication world. I mean, we're getting news by, you know, across the world 3 minutes later. And Hurricane Ian was the third costliest storm ever to hit the country. 149 people lost their lives.
Yeah.
In late September of 2022. So we're only removed like 6 months. Well, now the rebuilding starts. 8 Days of Hope 19, which is our 19th rebuilding trip. We'll be going to Fort Myers from May 20th to May 27th. We're going to help a couple hundred families rebuild their homes in 8 days. It's like extreme makeover, but my hair doesn't look as cool as that dude's does, and we don't have any buses.
Right.
So no buses move. But anyone can come. You can volunteer today. Already today, over 500 people have already signed up to go to that, which is 8 weeks away. Mm-hmm. So, again, a great missions trip for your family, your church, your business, loved
Amen.
Ones.
Yes.
All right. So talking to Steve Tiber. He's the president of 8 Days of Hope, which is a national ministry, and they're planning the Florida
rebuilding
yep. Trip, and then they're immediately this weekend working in Amory, Mississippi, which is about 25 minutes from where we sit here, where a tornado really did serious damage to that town of what. 8,000, 10,000.
Yeah, maybe? I think it's like 6,500 in Amory, but of course it also spilled over into Smithville. We were in Smithville yesterday. 100 homes were damaged in Smithville, and they had a tornado in 2011
right.
that we had our A3 building trip at.
Right.
So, you know, it's sad to see people you saw 12 years ago going through the same thing, but God has called us to love the brokenhearted. And the country, I believe, I'm going to just go here just for a second. Churches, be careful you don't get comfortable to encourage the saints to go because of a pandemic or for whatever reason. It's time once again that we go out and we share Jesus through our actions. If you have a group of 40 people at your church, come on down. We'll take care of you. 8daysofhope.com.
Talk for a minute about the efforts that 8 Days of Hope is focusing on the human trafficking.
Yeah, you know, 4 years ago we started a new arm, and skilled volunteers like to use their hands, and they don't mind tarpon roofs, but they want to do electrical outlets, they want to do plumbing, they want to do flooring. And so we started a new arm, and yesterday in Memphis we finished our 12th major project. It was a 5,000 square foot building. We partner with a ministry. That's what we do. We find ministries that are providing hope to those who've been rescued from trafficking, either adults or children.
What is trafficking exactly? Can you?
Oh man, here we go.
A lot of people hear that word, sure. And they go, I don't know what you're talking about. Yep. I don't see this. What's going on here?
It's the fastest growing crime in the world next to drugs. It's a $155 billion a year industry. It does happen in Vegas. It does happen in New Orleans and New York, but it also happens in South Haven, Mississippi, in Wichita, Kansas, and Erie, Pennsylvania. It is the fastest growing. 17% of kids being trafficked today are being trafficked by their parents. It's real. It's happening in your neighborhood. And there's ministries out there that provide free hope by providing emotional, physical, and spiritual help. And so we've helped 12 ministries now. We worked with Tim Tebow in Chattanooga, Tim Tebow Foundation, Frank Reich, who now coaches for the Panthers. He was the coach for the Colts. Him and his wife did a 17,000 square foot facility in Indianapolis. We did that one for free. And yesterday,
you mean you built it?
We built it.
Okay. What?
17,000 square feet. Tim, in 17 days.
You're like the Amish.
Thankfully, a lot of Amish come serve with us. I love it, man. People.
You know how fast they get
people.
Barns up.
I tell you
they
what.
They get barns up in 12 hours.
So it's interesting you say that.
Yeah.
We finished yesterday in Memphis with a way out, but on April 24th, we're breaking ground in an Amish community in Ohio. It's in Millersburg, Ohio, and we are partnering with a ministry called Safe Harbor. It is going to be the largest facility in the country, in the Northeast, for children rescued from trafficking. Children between the ages of 11 and 18 will go there for 18 months once they've been rescued, and they're going to be providing support not only to the kids emotionally, physically, and spiritually, but the families that they're going to go back and be reunited with. Because when you rescued a kid who maybe ran away or got groomed through you know, their smartphones or just fell in with the wrong crowd, how does a family take a kid back who's been through that? Mm. So there's like two different angles here. And so this is a $6.5 million project. 36 children will be able to be housed safely, have their own room, their own bathroom, with a house mom and counselors to provide hope. And we break ground April 24th.
This is a dark underbelly, the dark underbelly of the world. But here in America, then you don't, I just want people to understand what we're talking about. So with human trafficking, again, it's an unpleasant subject to talk about. You mentioned how 18% are, quote, trafficked. I shouldn't say quote.
Yeah, so let me give you some facts. These are important facts, especially people who have an audience like you do. People think people who are trafficked are illegal immigrants. It happens, but 83%
are kidnapped. I'm thinking they're kidnapped.
Like the movie Taken.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about.
83% of people being trafficked are American citizens. Some were groomed.
In our country.
In our country. Some were groomed. Some were tricked. Some people pose themselves as a 19-year-old boy that lives 30 minutes away, and it's a 42-year-old trafficker in another state. I've heard some crazy stories. Sometimes kids run away. They're in a foster home. They've had a rough journey. No one's loved them. Somebody convinces them that they're going to be loved, and next thing you know, they're being trafficked. They take their identity. They drug them and get them on drugs as quick as possible, and then they even threaten them. If you ever leave me, I know where your sister lives. If you ever leave me, I'm going to tell the world what you do. And so there's Christian organizations that go out and rescue. So this weekend in Memphis last week, an infant was rescued. Oh, crazy. And here's why, Tim, we don't know a lot about it. The church is afraid to talk about it because it's a messy subject. How do you talk about it Sunday morning at the pulpit when there's kids in the audience?
Yeah.
It's real. It's happening. We have a document on our website, 8dayshope.com. I'm looking at it right now, Tim. We hand it out today to our friends here at AFR. It's called Human Trafficking. If you're a youth pastor, if you're a parent or grandparent, you need to have this document. In the document are apps that your kids should not have on their phone. Now, some of them are okay, but you need to know that, yes, some people do use Facebook as a way to traffic. But there's a lot of apps that you need to know as a parent and grandparent when you check your phones. But it's real. We'll mail you brochures if you want to hand them out to the parents of your youth group. We want to be a communicator of the need and what we're doing about it.
Yeah.
Now, well, you said an infant. I associate trafficking with prostitution.
Yes.
So when we're talking an infant, like a little baby in your arms?
The average age of a child that's trafficked in America is 12 years old. So for every 17-year-old, that means there's a 7-year-old being trafficked.
Why?
Well,
why?
Well,
it's a tough subject, guys, too. I know it's not a fun thing to talk about, but we need to tell the church it's time to take our blinders off and let's go make a difference in dealing
with the sin. So you guys aren't involved in the law enforcement aspect of it, obviously, but what you're saying is you're building, 8 Days of Hope is building these homes.
Facilities for free for existing ministries that are rescuing people that are being trafficked.
Gotcha. So they're rescued. The children are rescued, and they go, what do we do with them?
Exactly.
Then we have a place.
Then are professional that have the counseling, emotional, physical, spiritual.
I have a question. In addition to our network, when it comes to the human trafficking situation here at least, are local TV stations and or national mainstream media outlets reaching out to you to cover these stories?
It's an interesting subject to talk about. And so there have been some 60-minute stories on some networks telling the world about what's happening. The ministries that we work with, check this out. This is interesting. So in Texas at the Refuge, 75% of the funds they need to love on these kids is provided by the state. The reason is the state has nowhere to send these kids.
Right.
And so they are leaning on faith-based organizations because there's no other options.
Right.
So this facility in Ohio, every child that is rescued that lives there, once it's built, which we're going to do.
Where is this in Ohio? Are you going to build this?
Millersburg, Ohio.
Okay.
It's about 30 miles west of the Akron-Canton area.
Because we have a lot of listeners, especially in the Columbus area.
So if you're skilled, if you're good with your hands, you're a handyman, handywoman, you're a contractor, email us at safehouse@8dayshope.com. We'll invite you to go whenever we build a safe house. There is a background check, and you will have to sign some non-disclosure documents, and you can't take your phone on site, some things like that. But, last week when we were in Memphis, when we built this facility in just under 2 weeks, a survivor came and spoke to our volunteers. And our volunteers have heard about it from me and others. But when you meet somebody who said, I was chained to a bed, and every night I would look at that doorknob, and I knew it would turn 6 times every night. And I kept asking myself, if there was a God, why would he allow this? But now she's walking with the Lord, and Amen. She actually works for the ministry, and she brings hope by living out her story, but it became so real to me when that lady tears strolling down there saying, thank you guys for building this. Thank you so much for the church to respond.
That's why I was asking if other people have reached out to cover this story, because like we're glad to have you and we're honored to cover these kinds of stories, but it would help more people become aware if a local blah, 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 actually bothered to cover the story.
Yeah. It's a challenge because like the groundbreaking we're doing April 24th won't be on site. Mm-hmm. It'll be off site. You have to protect that. So again, it's a messy, guys, this is real. It is rampant. I'm excited. There's some people tied to the NFL like Frank Reich and Tim Tebow and some others who are partnering with us and looking for ways to build other facilities. But keep praying for the Ministry of 8 Days of Hope. 50,000 volunteers have traveled with us, 25,000 skilled, and that's why we want to build some of these facilities.
Okay, again, I was thinking particularly the one that's – when do you think you'll start building the one in Ohio?
April 24th.
Oh, 3 weeks.
Yep.
Or 4 weeks,
it's
whatever.
It's a six-month project, and we'll need volunteers every two-week sections. So it will end around 7-8 months down the road.
Okay, so if particularly folks in Ohio who listen to AFR, Kentucky, Pennsylvania, around that
West
area.
Virginia.
Well, you can come from anywhere, but I mean.
Pennsylvania.
Email us,
safehouse@8daysofhope.com, safehouse@8daysofhope.com.
Okay.
We're going to give you a safe place to sleep. We're going to have a great time, and you will, your life will be changed forever. Yep. It really will, Tim.
All right, thank you, Steve. God bless you, brother.
We'll
keep promoting 8 Days of Hope, and you guys. Hey, by the way, that lady you just said who was a victim of
survivor,
and she spoke to 8 Days of Hope.
She did.
If she would be willing to come on through, with us, if
yes,
you know, even anonymously.
So here's what I'm gonna do: I'll connect you with the leader of A Way Out.
Okay.
And I think she would anonymously, but the story needs to be told to him.
Yeah.
It's not going to be an easy conversation. But we as followers of Christ need to take our blinders off and realize this is real, and now God is calling us to be a part of the solution.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate
it. God bless you guys.
You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. That's Steve Tiber from 8 Days of Hope, who's on with us regularly here on AFR.
Like Steve says, it's a tough subject. We talked about what happened at the Christian school in Nashville the other day. And we're trying to understand the depth of evilness in a mind that somebody goes into a school and shoots up little baby kids that they don't know.
Right.
Because they're mad about something. And then you hear Steve's story there about how he said even infants are being trafficked.
Again, evil.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
It only confirms what the Bible says, that there is evil and wickedness in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we as Christians are taught to fight back.
And it's not just big cities like Los Angeles and New Orleans. It can be happening in small communities too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no barrier to the evilness that's out there.
I've never known anybody. Well, not that people come up and tell you, hey, I was trafficked, but have you guys ever known anybody that experienced that?
No, but I can tell you in my experience helping like Charlie Butts cover this topic for AFN, we've had the same lady at an anti-trafficking organization tell us this is happening in every zip code in America. And that's an unsettling soundbite when you think about, you know, where you're from and what your zip code is. And you're like, really? But that's what she said more than once. She's told us that.
All right, next story, Chris.
Well, let's end it with some audio of Senator John Kennedy. He does many television appearances, and we bring in his comments from time to time. One of the things that Senator Kennedy, the Republican from Louisiana, was brought on to Fox News to talk about was President Biden's low poll numbers and whether the president may run for re-election in 2024. Clip 6.
Well, those aren't strong numbers for President Biden. They're just not quite sure he's up to the job of being president or finishing a sentence, for that matter. Having said that, he's not going to announce that he's not going to run for re-election, and he may run for re-election for all I know. He's sure acting like it, but I would expect him to act like it. He doesn't want to become a lame duck any sooner than he has to.
You know what, guys? I don't know. It's one of those things. I don't know what the Democrats are going to do, but he ain't going to run again.
So you don't think he's going to run?
Well, no.
Okay.
I say that, and then I start second-guessing myself. Mm. Come on. How can he? He can hardly – he's going to be hardly able to fill out this his term here. We've got
But here's the problem for the Democrats.
Is he going to go out campaigning or stay in the basement again?
But if not Joe Biden, who?
Huh?
If not Joe Biden, who?
That's true.
I that's a good question. I don't know. That's a very good question.
Gavin Newsom, he may be popular in parts of California, but the rest of America is not going to buy
Gretchen
that.
Gretchen Whitmer might. She just got reelected. You know, and they'll try to say she survived, you know, re-election, that kind
of thing. But let me ask you this question. You know how people get when they get older, and if they start getting dementia, even in its mild forms, then argumentative,
mm-hmm.
defensive, or they have the way they want to do something, and they're not going to listen to the rest of the family? Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
This is a, huh?
Yep.
And so what if Democrat leaders come to Biden and say, listen, we really need you to step aside and endorse, I don't know, Gavin Newsom, whoever they got. They don't have a bench, really,
yeah.
huh? Because you're too old. And if he says, I'm only getting started.
Yeah.
Okay, where's the, past the chocolate chip? And I, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So what if he says that? And they say,
I think he will.
You think he will what?
I do think he will run again. He seems, I don't want to use the word arrogant, but he's of that mindset that I'm awesome.
Well, he also doesn't have to campaign.
No, we saw that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Sure.
Against Trump, he didn't campaign.
No.
So why campaign?
Yeah.
And also, I would say this, you would not campaign. Everybody knows Joe Biden, and everybody knows what they think of him.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like Trump, quite frankly. There's nothing more to say. You know everything you need to know. It's not something that Biden's going to do where he goes, you know, on the campaign trail out to Colorado and says, I want to tell you about Joe Biden and pass that chocolate ice cream over here, sir. Anyway, no, do you know what I'm saying? There's nothing new to say. So in this age of internet and television, That's the campaign, quite frankly. Now, Trump was unusual. He did all these rallies around the country, but I think there's no need for Biden to – some would say there's no need for Biden to campaign because, the fix is in, right?
Right, I mean,
Some people
– Well, when you have the mainstream media on your side
– Right, right.
You're not going to point out what you've been talking about, his mental faculties and all of that sort of thing. They're not going to point out the disaster on our southern border –
Right.
It's like it doesn't exist.
Also, this is what they did during the campaign leading up to the presidential election in 2020. If you're smart, you don't expose Biden to places where he will make major gaffes.
No.
And people would say, well, you're hiding the truth about his mental faculties. Well, yeah, I am, because that's his weakness, and I don't want that to be in the 24-hour news cycle over and over and over again.
Yes.
So, I don't know. You guys, you bring up a good point. I say Biden can't be the nominee, but then you challenge me with, well, who then? And I don't have an answer for you, because it sure, and I know I've used the word ain't before in this hour, but I'm going to use it again. It ain't going to be Kamala Harris.
No.
Huh? I mean, she would be worse than Biden. She would fare worse in a presidential election than Biden, even at his age.
They'll reassign her to something, so that way she stays in the administration, and they'll replace her, possibly. That's what I think.
I think she's – no, you can't do that. She's a woman of color, and you can't kick her down the ladder, Chris. Come on, man.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.